welcome to the latest episode of The Booming Curmudgeon. Today we're going to be talking about health of our country. And one of the things I want to frame the discussion with is part of the speech of Robert F. Kennedy when he withdrew from the presidential election. And I'm going to share some facts that were shared by RFK. We'll call him Bobby for discussion purposes in today's discussion. But I'm going to read a segment of the speech that he gave when he withdrew from the presidential election before joining with Donald Trump to effectively lead a Make America Healthy Again movement. And as we know, RFK, Bobby, has been nominated as the HHS secretary. And that has a lot to do with the fact that he's going to try and make America healthy again. So without further ado, I'm going to read portions of this and then we can talk about it. Today, we spend more on healthcare than any other country on earth, twice what they pay in Europe. And yet we have the worst health outcomes of any nation in the world. We're about 79th in health outcomes behind Costa Rica, Nicaragua, Mongolia, and other countries. Nobody has a chronic disease burden like we have. During the COVID epidemic, we had the highest body count of any country in the world. We had 16% of the COVID deaths, even though we only have 4.2% of the world's population. The CDC says that's because we're the sixth people on Earth. We have the highest chronic disease rate on Earth, and the average American who died from COVID had on average 3.8 chronic diseases. So these were people who had immune system collapse, who had mitochondrial dysfunction, and no other country has anything like this. Two-thirds of American adults and children suffer from chronic health issues. 50 years ago, that number was less than 1%. So we've gone from 1% to 66%. In America, 74% of Americans are now overweight or obese, including 50% of our children. 120 years ago, when somebody was obese, they were sent to the circus. There were case reports about them. In Japan, the childhood obesity rate is 3% compared to our 50%. Here, half Americans have pre-diabetes, or type 2 diabetes. Today, one out of every three kids who walks into the doctor's office is diabetic or pre-diabetic, and the mitochondrial disorder that causes diabetes is also causing Alzheimer's, which is now classified as diabetes. There's been an explosion of neurological illnesses that were never seen when we were kids. ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, Tourette's syndrome, narcolepsy, ASD, Asperger's, autism. In the year 2000, the autism rate was 1 in 1,500. Now autism rates in kids are 1 in 36, according to the CDC. Nobody's talking about how 1 in every 22 kids in California has autism. And this is a crisis that 77% of our kids are too disabled to serve in the U.S. military. He asked in his speech, what is happening to our country and why isn't this in the headlines every single day? With respect to autism, this is a change in incidence, not in methodology, not in screening. In RFK's generation, which is 70-year-old, old men, which is similar to me, I'm 60, the odds and rate were about 1 in 10,000. In our kids' generation, it's 1 in 34. And again, in California, it's 1 in 22. He asks, why are we letting this happen? Why are we allowing this to happen to our children? These are the most precious assets that we have in our country. How can we let this happen to them? Another issue, about 18% of American teens have fatty liver disease, and that's going to be non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. That's like one out of every five. That disease, when we were kids, only affected late-stage alcoholics who were elderly. Cancer rates are skyrocketing in the young and the old. Young adult cancers are up 79%, and one in four American women is on antidepressant medication. 40% of teens have mental health diagnosis. 15% of high schoolers are on Adderall, and 500,000 children are on SSRIs. So what's causing this suffering? And this is where Bobby goes into what I believe is true. First and the worst is ultra-processed foods. 70% of American children's diet is ultra-processed. And you can really trace this back to sort of the low-fat fad of the 70s when they removed fat from diets, which for processed food removed a lot of the flavors. So what did they do? The food industry added sugars to these. So there's a lot of added sugars in ultra-processed foods, which consist primarily of processed sugar, ultra-processed grains, and seed oils. Many of the food products that we have in America are really prohibited in Europe and other countries because they're effectively poison. We have toxic chemicals in our food, our medicine, our environment, pesticides, food additives, pharmaceutical drugs, and toxic waste permeate every cell of our bodies. America's puberty rate is now occurring at age 10 to 13, which is 6 years earlier than girls were reaching puberty in 1900. Our country has the earliest puberty rates of any continent on the earth. And no, this isn't because of better nutrition. This is not normal. Breast cancer is also estrogen-driven and now strikes 1 in 8 women. We are mass poisoning all of our children and our adults. So this is how he lays out his case of joining the Trump administration, which is fine. But the reality is, if he wants to make a difference, and I believe he does, he's going to join the Trump administration and be put in a prominent position to actually have effect on this. I've pulled some other stats too for the discussion. As he suggested, our incidence of being overweight or obese, we're now at 73.6%. That's the 74% he references. A subset of that is people who are obese, which is a subset of overweight and obese. And I forget what the BMI calculation is. But in the years 21 to 23, 40.3% of our population, according to the CDC, was considered obese. This is linked to heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, kidney disease. The obesity rate in the U.S. has nearly tripled in the last 60 years. In 1960 to 62, the obesity rate was 13%. Now it's 40.3%. That's literally, it's a fourfold increase, nearly fourfold increase. That's 400%. Okay. Overweight and obese trends, 1997. Okay, this is the combination of overweight and obese. In 1997, it was 39.4% of our population. And now it's 73.6 in the year 2017 to 2020. That's an increase of 87% in effectively 13 years. In my career, I was a finance executive. And one of the most important things in terms of assessing finance and corporate strength is trend analysis. And at the end of the day, we can look at a static stat and say, okay, it's 73.6. What does that mean? But when you look and you realize that in 1997, it was 39.4%. In 88 to 94, it was 22.9%. In 1960 to 62, it was 13%. We're now up to 73.6%. That is unbelievable, the increase in obesity since the 70s. I've watched, there's a great documentary out called Food Inc., and it talks about what happens to food and how the food lobbyists back in the 70s were very instrumental in changing the guidance coming out of the government with respect to the food pyramid and things that drove our American diet. And when I was a kid in the 70s, going to the beach in the 70s, you would never see people that were overweight, out of shape. And again, I'm not fat shaming here. I'm just simply pointing out a fact. I had 700 people graduate in my high school. There was only one memorable person that I can honestly say was overweight. And unfortunately, you know, kids are kids, and that person got a lot of grief for that growing up. But we're not talking about lots of people. We're talking about an individual in a class of 700 students. I can only think of one that I can look back on and say that person was overweight or out of shape. It's unfortunate. And unfortunately, big pharma, really big food, we're talking ultra-processed food, the food industry, food lobbyists, if you trace it back and you know, again, a lot of this is from RFK, and I don't believe their opinions, but if you look at the history of these food companies, when the tobacco industry was kind of put on the outs, what happened was tobacco companies ended up buying food companies, and they've spent a good portion of their ownership years in the food industry trying to make food more addictive. So if you look at, for example, I went to McDonald's as a kid. I graduated high school, I think 165 pounds soaking wet, and I ate like a horse. My brothers and I would consume a gallon of milk a day. I'd go to McDonald's, I'd get 2 Big Macs, some fries, Coke, forget Diet Coke, Coke, and we never put on weight. And I'm not a scientist and I don't have studies to back things up, but I do know this. That's not the way it is today. There's a lot of fast food eating. There's a lot of eating out. There's a lot of processed food eating. And I believe our metabolism as a country has changed across our population. So when you see stats like 74% of our entire population is overweight or obese, I think we have to do something about it. Now, if we look at what is our culture of treating disease generally, we've really become a pharma-centric nation in terms of our approach to healthcare, or as I like to call it, sick care, because we don't really spend a lot of time on prevention. We spend a lot of time on diagnosis of, okay, this is your issue. Here's your pill. Here's your shot. This is why you see this increase of popularity in things like Ozempic, where it's becoming kind of the fad drug, where you give yourself a shot of Ozempic and somehow can lose weight. What they fail to mention is that the weight loss from Ozempic and others like it, Wegovy and others, which I think is a similar, if not the same drug, just branded differently, is that the weight loss occurs in your lean muscle tissue. It doesn't actually attack the fat and remove fat from your body. It actually goes after lean muscle tissue. So you can technically be lighter, but fatter by taking this stuff. And you're signing up for a lifetime of this. So all these fad diets, all of the, whatever the latest is, whether it's the, you know, the keto or the paleo or the low fat or the this or the that, disguises the fact that we just have a horrendous food system in our country. Okay? If you go to the school lunch programs, I think the statistic, if I'm not mistaken, in fact, I'll look at here, I read in my notes, 70 or 77% of school lunches are processed foods, no vegetables. That means we're poisoning the poor. And it's unfortunate, but what we're seeing is the health outcomes. You can't argue with the health outcomes. We're sicker than we've ever been. We're touted as having the best medical community, which is great. I think if you need knee surgery, you're going to get a nice knee replacement. I think that's great. No problem. But I think if you have a chronic disease that's brought about by general lack of health and you can trace it to diet and exercise, typically, you're not having a whole foods diet. You're eating a lot of processed foods, those people. And I think that that really kind of defines our country as it is now. Obviously, there's exceptions. There are people that are in shape. I mean, I have a son who's an athlete and he's in strong shape. Generally, my family has focused on health and nutrition as an important component. We've been at various stages, vegetarian, vegan, etc. But we do try and cook our own meals as much as we possibly can and limit our eating out. But the truth of the matter is it's very difficult in America to live a healthy lifestyle, not because of willpower, but because of just availability and what's out there and what the culture dictates in terms of how we live our lives. So I think that this is a serious discussion that we have to have. I think we have to generally get people to understand the way things are. And I think my biggest fear coming with Bobby Kennedy coming in as the HHS secretary are the headwinds he's going to face from big food and big pharma about trying to make America healthy again. As I guarantee you that the thing that's most in favor of the pharmaceutical industry in our country is to have chronically ill people. So the notion that pills are going to cure the chronically ill, they don't. They actually just treat symptoms. So the diabetic who's on insulin or other drugs for a lifetime is not taking those drugs to get rid of their diabetes. They're taking those drugs to continue living with diabetes. So why do we have such an increase in instances in diabetes in our country? I think it's directly related to the lack of health and the increase in obesity in our country as a whole. I think lack of exercise, I think we become sedentary. You never see kids playing in the neighborhoods anymore and going out and playing football or capture the flag or run down in the, I see very little of that. People are behind screens. The amount of screen time is just, it's really just sad in our country. And I include myself in that as well. I think that if we're to be honest about how the state of our life is, we wake up, we look at our phones, and we spend most of the day looking at our phones. Go to a restaurant now and watch families that sit around, they're all on their phones. They're not talking to each other. They're not resolving conflict. They're texting people that are sitting in the chair across the room from them. So I think we have a lot of issues that we have to address. But I think that bringing Bobby Kennedy in to lead HHS and see if we can't change these things and drive our population to eating better, exercising more. But it's going to take will of the people, honestly. You can't drag people to the gym, and that's the truth of it. So opinions matter, and the more people that share the opinions about what it takes to drive a healthy lifestyle, I guarantee you this, if the only thing we had available in the stores and in our restaurants were whole foods, healthy grains, lack of seed oils, with adequate nutrition and proper nutrition, not just heavy and simple carbs and sugars, but real healthy food. If that was the only thing available to us, we would eat it. And that's not to say that people wouldn't be missing their ultra-processed foods because they are addictive. They're addictive both in, I think, physiological, but I think psychologically as well. We're a busy nation. Everyone's working really hard. And who wants to spend an hour cooking dinner when you can spend 25 minutes with a microwave oven cooking your dinner? And I know that mileage varies on that with respect to families and households. But the truth of the matter is, if you step away and look from 40,000 feet, at our population. We eat very poorly. And because of that, we've seen the trends in overall health or lack thereof of our nation since the 60s, predominantly with those things coming in the 70s and 80s. So that's the thing with the food. I'm very hopeful that Bobby's going to fix it, that he's going to drive some of these things. One of my kids took a propaganda course, World War II propaganda. And it's interesting, actually, as she describes kind of the methodology they use to sort of get the nation thinking a particular way. I think we need to do marketing of these things as a nation, public service announcements, something to drive the change in behavior. And my biggest fear is that you have major money-making entities in both the big food industries and the big pharma industry that will fight tooth and nail to not change those things. So I'm hopeful, and I'm optimistic, but from a trend analysis perspective, if we're at 74% overweight and obese today, and the instances of chronic illnesses that are attached to that, if they continue on that trend line, I'm afraid to see what our nation looks like 20 years from now. And I think we need to fix it, and I think we need to do it in a serious way. Not in a, this Bobby's going to take care of it, but I think we have to have individual responsibility at the household level and also within our institutions, both corporately and governmentally, relative to making our country healthy again. The business of going to the doctor and getting a pill for every issue you have, rather than changing lifestyles so that you don't have those issues to begin with, I think is a shift. It's going to be a shift that we have to promote as a country and through our governmental agencies and through our corporate interests that drive these things. So I'm hopeful because a corporation is made up of people who are citizens who understand the influence and impact of what they're doing. Yet I recognize that their responsibility is to make money. Their responsibility is not to sell less of what they're selling. My hope is that they can sell something different and that it can be more healthy and that the only available thing that our population has are healthy items. And if that means that the Fruit Loops don't have so much color because they don't have poisonous red dye or other things in the grocery stores like it is in Europe, because they've banned the dyes that are used in the U.S. in Fruit Loops. I know that's a simplistic example, but I've seen congressional hearings where they bring out the two bags of Fruit Loops, one from Europe and one from the United States, and the one from the U.S. looks like it's a neon sign of Fruit Loops color, and the one from Europe is a little more muted, but you can't sell the U.S. one in Europe because of the dyes that they use and the chemicals that they use in establishing the colors of that food, and that's the difference. They do it in Europe because of health, and I understand that someone's got a marketing study that says people like to have the colored Fruit Loops better than the less colored Fruit Loops, but so what? If it makes our country sicker, why aren't we having our government agencies regulate those things and see that those chemicals aren't introduced into our food system? So that's food. The other side of the coin is the business of the pharmaceutical industry. I looked at some statistics, and again, I don't want to label myself as an anti-vaxxer, but to some degree, I think the vaccines that have been introduced in our protocols for children have gone overboard. And I'll give you an example. When I was a kid, we had a very small number of vaccines that we took as kids and as children that were given to us. Okay? And if I look at my generation, right, I was born in 1963, so that, you know, by 1980, deaths by infectious disease. So if you think about vaccines, what they're intended to do is they're intended to eliminate infectious disease. By extension, the number of deaths by infectious disease. An example, if you look historically, in 1900, we had 797 people per 100,000 citizens. So that's 0.797%, rounded to 1% of the population would die of infectious disease. By 1980, that number had been reduced to 36 deaths per 100,000. And there were no new vaccines introduced in the 70s. Okay? The number of vaccines has gone up dramatically. We now vaccinate for 15 different diseases. And by the time a child is 18 months old, they've had 26 separate shots with an additional 8 shots from 4 years old through 16. So that's 34 shots to cover 15 different diseases. In 1963, we vaccinated for 4 diseases. So in my mind, if I look at that and I say, okay, I'm 63 and there were no new vaccines introduced in the 70s. So you basically had the same vaccine pack from the early 60s all the way through the 70s. So if I look at by 1980, 36 deaths per 100,000. And then I go, okay, well, 2018, right? Now that we're vaccinating against 15 different illnesses, shouldn't that 36 be dramatically reduced right? Because we've got so many more vaccines, so the amount of infectious disease deaths should have gone down significantly. Here's the rub. In 2018, it was 34 deaths per 100,000. So with the addition of effectively 11 new vaccines, and I don't know what the number of shots for the marginal increase in vaccines, diseased vaccines were, but you know, you're now taking 34 shots. And again, 26 shots by the time a child is 18 months, including things for sexually transmitted diseases and other things that they know the parent doesn't have, they still vaccinate for. So we've introduced all these vaccines. We have not materially changed the number of deaths for overall infectious diseases, okay? So we've added a lot of vaccines, and I look at the outcomes and say, okay, well, have we reduced the incidences of death for those diseases? And at a high level, I don't see that. And I know that there is a lot of talk that vaccines are the best thing. I had a physician tell me that vaccinations were the best thing that happened in modern medicine. And I would say that if you're a pharmaceutical person, that you would agree with that, right? Because you're effectively signing up every person for 34 shots that put money in the pocket of the pharmaceutical industry. I said, that's great. And then I look at COVID-19 and our response to COVID-19, particularly with respect to vaccines. And there was a lot of talk during the pandemic. And I know there was a lot of shifting sands and shifting wind in terms of we don't know a lot about it. And then all of a sudden we know more about it. And then we find out that we're going in a different direction. So there was a lot of moving parts back in the COVID-19 era. And the establishment of vaccines, there was a lot of discussion, particularly government discussion, about vaccine mandates, industry vaccine mandates, military vaccine mandates, etc. And I've had a lot of conversation among family members of mine and people I know about vaccines, a lot of conversations with my doctor. But now in hindsight, I look back and I say, okay, we've come up with a vaccine that they call a vaccine that, which is the COVID-19. I think they're starting to call it the COVID-19 shot, similar to the flu shot, which doesn't really vaccinate you against it. In other words, the polio vaccine keeps you from getting polio. It's my understanding. I believe this is true, and please fact check me on this if you feel it necessary. But getting the COVID-19 vaccine, as I understand it, neither prevents you from getting COVID-19 nor prevents you from spreading it to others. And from my perspective, that doesn't meet what my expectation would be for something called a vaccine. So the business that we're going to promote this as a shot that everybody gets, along with the flu shot, along with all these things that don't prevent one from actually getting the disease. And based on the fact that there are not a lot of studies that I'm aware of that have pointed to the efficacy of these in a way that doesn't promote these vaccines as something they're not. So I'm suspicious of the vaccine. I look at the amount of chronic illness we have. I look at the amount of money that the pharmaceutical industry make. I look at the fact that there are only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical advertisements on television. It's us and New Zealand. And when I was a kid, pharmaceutical companies were not allowed to advertise on television. And now I look at TV, I watch sports, anytime I'm watching TV, I see a great number of ads. The percentage of ads that are pharmaceutical ads is astounding to me. And I just know that it's just a big money grab. And then you recognize that the government agencies that regulate the pharmaceutical industry are effectively made up of people that have cycled through from the pharmaceutical industry. And you recognize that the CDC is funded 75% by a corporate entity. And it makes me wonder, is that pharmaceutical industry really for me? Or is it really to the benefit of the pharmaceutical industry that we're sick? And I think to myself, interesting. How would the pharmaceutical industry benefit from people getting better? They wouldn't actually. They actually have an incentive that the population is sick because they can sell the drug to treat a symptom. And we get the population lining up and saying, thank you for treating my symptom. And it's almost like the three-card Monty, right? The guy running the three-card Monty game wants you to think one thing when something else is really happening. And I feel like that's true with the pharmaceutical industry. They want you to think that they're the ones helping, right? Because they've defined help as removing your symptom or alleviating your symptom or allowing you to live with the sickness while taking the drug. It allows you to go forward. When the reality is we should be spending the vast majority of our thought process and our problem solving on saying, how can we become healthy so that we don't need a drug to manage a symptom? And I feel like we've not focused any material energy as a nation on that question. And I believe, and I'm hopeful, that Bobby Kennedy can come on board, get the support of both the president and the government and the legislature to bring these things forth for our nation. If our legislators would step up and step away from the special interests. And when I say special interest, I mean the food lobby and the pharmaceutical lobby. And trust me, they're big. So I'm optimistic, but I'm a realist and recognize that we've heard very little about Bobby Kennedy's nomination for HHS secretary. I'm very interested to see how those confirmation hearings go with him, because I believe these are shadow interests, these lobbyists for pharma and big food. I don't know whose pockets are getting lined by them, but I do know this, that if we all of a sudden see a major objection or negative campaign against Bobby Kennedy, that'll tell me everything I need to know, which is that those interests are driving forth an agenda that says we don't want the American public to realize how unhealthy they are. Because the American public generally likes to look, we have the best medical system in the whole world, right? We brag about it. I hear people bragging about it all the time. And yet nobody talks about how sick we are. And it's unfortunate. So I'm going to leave you with this, which is we're an unhealthy nation. We need to change the discourse and dialogue about that. We need to get serious about that. And I know that that's going to create inconvenience for people. It just is. It's going to change the way we do things. And like anything, change is difficult. And I think that it's important. I think if I were to go back to my childhood and recognize we had the presidential physical fitness testing and so forth, I fear that our kids couldn't do that today. Some could, of course, but not in the numbers and the percentages that they could back then. I just don't think that we're healthy enough as a nation. And I think we're giving into it. And I don't think we need to give into it anymore. I think we need to buck up against that. And we need to change the paradigm of, well, we're just, you know, we give into it. All of a sudden we have, you know, overweight mannequins that are advertising clothing. And I guess everyone does need to see, yes, I want to be able to see myself when I go to buy something. I think that's great. And I think there's an empathy to that on one hand. On the other hand, it feels like we're giving in to the fact that we're just unhealthy. So let's recognize that and start to market ourselves to the unhealthy people, because the unhealthy people will buy things from us if we just show that. We understand you, and we understand that all body shapes and sizes come together. But the truth of the matter is fit, unfit is unfit. And we can't start to create a delusion that says I'm twice the weight I should be for my height, but I'm really a healthy overweight person. I think that thinking is dangerous to our society, because I think it's going to put us in trouble. I think we need to fix our food system. I think by fixing our food, fixing the way people eat, we can become healthy. God has given us a body that can heal itself if fed with proper nutrition and proper things that feed our cells. I think that that's not going to be in the best interest of the pharmaceutical industry. And I think to myself, well, that's tough beans. It's not about the pharmaceutical industry. This is about our Americans getting healthy so that we don't require medicines to mask our symptoms and to alleviate symptoms. I think if we address our general unhealthiness of our population through diet and exercise, and that's not saying just cut calories. It means put good food, good healthy food that lacks chemicals, that lacks GMO, that lacks things that are unhealthy at our cellular level. I think that we can see that we will prosper both physically and healthfully, and we won't require pharmaceuticals to prop us up as a nation. And I think that will benefit everybody, even if it doesn't benefit the pharmaceutical industry. I think they'll figure out a way, much as tobacco did. Unfortunately, tobacco went and found a different addictive product to invest in, which is food. But hopefully the pharmaceutical industry will reshape itself. And I really don't care what happens to them, honestly. I think there's a value to the drugs that we have. But, you know, this notion of we've got to be able to sell more drugs and we've got to be able to do more things. And, you know, we don't just now have a COVID shot. We have a COVID shot and a double boost and a triple boost. And it's now gets into the protocol of recommended vaccines to get. And everyone stops asking, well, wait a second, the vaccine doesn't actually stop you from getting the disease, nor does it stop you from spreading it. What does it actually do? They don't want to hear that question. That's not a question people want to address, certainly not within the industry, because what's the point of taking something that neither prevents the disease nor prevents you from spreading it to someone else? I don't understand the value of that. Certainly not one that says every drug, particularly those fast-tracked vaccines, mRNA vaccines that really deal with altering your cellular structure. People have, will try and sell you that that's a good thing, but I'm suspicious that that's a good thing, particularly when you see the number of increase of heart attacks in young people that are doing athletic things. And I don't believe that it's coincidental that with the onslaught of mRNA vaccine like COVID-19 and the incidence of people having cardiac issues, I don't believe they're disconnected. I believe that the VIRS system, the reporting for vaccine injury, I think would play that out. And I would encourage people to look into that, even though I don't have statistics in front of me. But I think you'll be hearing a lot of that with the new administration, because they have people that are only interested in what is really happening. And if we can get studies that are funded by people other than the pharmaceutical industry and food industry about these things, and that they're truly independent and they're peer-reviewed, I think we'll see the bringing forth of information that isn't presented one-sided for the benefit of those corporate interests. So I'm hoping that we go in the right direction with this. I would be interested to hear thoughts of any listeners in these regards. And there'll be more to come on this in the months and years ahead as we go through the Trump administration, as we watch Bobby Kennedy and what he does within Health and Human Services and the various agencies that roll up through there, which I believe CDC and FDA roll up through that cabinet position. So it'll be very interesting to see how this plays out as we go forth. But we do need to change the health of our country. We need to reverse these trends in chronic illness. I think we need to take a look at the vaccine schedule and say, does it make sense? Anyway, good topic. I think lots more to come. I think as you watch the news and information that comes out over the coming years, see if these trends go backwards, but start thinking about them. Start to raise your hand if you think we have a problem. Start to eat healthy. Get whole foods. Get vegetables. Eat a balanced diet. Reduce the number of simple carbs you take in, particularly sugars and other things. I need to, and it's hard because I walk through the grocery counter too and see that the candy's right there as you're checking out, and it's an impulse buy. And trust me, I've bought enough peanut M&Ms at the checkout line to say I'm not hypocritical in this. I just recognize these are issues. I need to address them for myself. But I'd like to see us increase the national dialogue in these areas so that we as a nation can take these on, because the government's not going to do it for us. We need to do it as a people. We need to take it on seriously in our sphere of influence. And for the most part, that's in our families, if not in groups that we talk with and share our successes in these areas. And those things can become things that others can look to as inspiration. So with that, I'm going to let you go. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you the next time.